Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house.
Well, welcome back to Slash and Jax. I'm Tom Allen. She's Stephanie Coney. She's Jay-Z on a Tuesday appearance on the board because Jay-Z has a guest today.
Woohoo!
She's turning into a real producer over there. She found somebody she thought would be a good guest, and I said, well, invite him or her in, and she did. And now she's... Are you going to do the whole interview and everything, Jay-Z?
Nope.
Okay.
You're doing it.
All right. Dow Futures up 39. NASDAQ Futures only up 7. We were up a lot more earlier, and all of a sudden we are not. Did you guys, Steph, did you catch that turnaround yesterday? Was that wild or what? We were up 300 and some points, went down 500, closed down like 250 or something. I haven't seen one of those in like a really, really long time. The market looks, somewhat dangerous here. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, it did a roundabout.
So guess what? How you can become infected by recent past.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean me. Yesterday I'm looking at, we're up, you know, a boatload, and I see that we're trading, it's in a spider now, we're trading probably, I'm going to say 266, 267. There's an expiration in the spider last night.
Yep.
So I look at the 263 puts and I go, you know, they're like 10 cents, 12 cents. I go, I should buy some of these. I'm thinking, you know, what's the matter with you? You're 1.5% out of the money 5 hours before the close. And we went through, what, a whole 14 months, 15 months without a 1% move? And I'm thinking, you big dummy, what are you buying those for? So I don't. 20 cents, 30 cents, 40 cents. Guess where they trade?
I tried through the money, didn't they?
350.
Wow.
And then I actually get another flash. It's easy to get flashes when you're actually not, when you don't actually do the trade. It's about 2:45, and I go, you know what?
I've made my most money ever when I didn't do the trade.
Yeah.
Meaning, I never took any of the profits, but I definitely made some great decisions.
Yes. You know, you ever saw anybody lose paper trading?
No, it's a myth.
Yeah, it's a myth. So I go, you know, we have not, as bad as somebody sell us have been, Steph, we've not had one yet, and I could be corrected, and we might have had one. We've not had one that finished all the way into the close. We've always bought on the close because everybody, we haven't had so many days in a row, we've come back the next day. So everybody wants out. So the things that were 350 at 2:45, I said, you know, I should buy those calls. They were a dime.
Right.
Guess what? The 350 ones go out worthless, and the calls go out at 70 cents.
Easy money.
Yeah, easy money. And yet, how often do you make money buying calls or puts over 1% out of the money or an hour to go? Like once out of, what, how many bazillion days? I mean,
Never happens.
Never happens.
Never happens.
But it did yesterday, or it would have yesterday. And it is, you know, we didn't need the Boeing situation, because Boeing at one point was down like 50 million. What is, and I still have not, I haven't heard this morning. I was looking, nobody knows, this is like a brand new plane that went down,
it
right?
It is, yeah. It's a 757, I thought?
737. 757s, they don't make those anymore.
No, 737, you're right.
737, was it the MAX?
Yeah, I think so. And 182 people on it?
Yeah, 189, I'm thinking.
89?
Somewhere in there.
Oh, somewhere in there.
And brand new planes don't normally fall out of the air.
No, especially because they usually take them and fly them around the U.S. before they deliver them somewhere else for a while.
Well, plus you got to get it there.
Yep, you got to fly it there. They don't ship them over.
You know, those guys have an incredible amount of planes on order. This the name of the outfit. They.
Oh, you mean the Indonesians?
Yeah, but there's one outfit that is the airline over there that releases it to everybody, and they're going to buy like 250 of these things. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Boeing's...
There's like 4,500 of these on backlog.
That's why Boeing's stock has been turned up lately.
Yeah, do you think that we really only should have one airmaker in the world? Or we got two, but
we
I don't think...
Two.
Well, yeah, but do you think they really compete?
I mean, it depends. It seems like they do, at least in some markets. I think it just depends. Boeing does not own the industry, that's for sure.
I'm not so sure about that with a backlog like that. How
much does the Airbus have?
Probably some, too.
Yeah, I would assume, you know, I think...
I think maybe we need another producer. Of course, those guys from Bombardier are making some sort of inroads.
Sure, we'll have to look it up later and come back to it and figure out...
I actually ran something off last night. It's probably over on the printer, but I'll get it on break. But it's my long-departed professor, Milton Friedman... one day said one of the things, if he had time to do, which of course he didn't have much time, he was always doing something, he would love to do some serious research on monopolies versus duopolies versus oligopolies. He actually thought in some ways once you get to like a duopoly or an oligopoly with four people, it was almost worse than a monopoly, and you're just kidding yourself. I'm with you that Airbus and Boeing, now they're going to compete on the high end, because there's not enough customers. But do you really think they're cutting price?
Oh, no.
When you got a 4,500 backup on a 737s to beat the Airbus 320 or something?
No, I mean, they have probably figured out... it's like rum, right? Rum used to be only made by two different companies. One decided, really, that they were only going to focus on white rum, and the other one decided they were going to focus on dark rum. So for like a couple hundred years, they've been in competition, but they've really segmented the market into just two different areas, right? In the last couple of years, they broke that convention and started moving into each other's territory. But back to your point about two different organizations who kind of balance each other out, right? They find where they work, they find where they make their money, and you leave the other one alone because it looks better and it's easier to compete against someone you know than someone you don't know.
Oh, yeah, they got to be way more pissed off at Bombardier. Remember the tariff they wanted to put on Bombardier, Boeing?
Yeah.
Speaking of rum, well, Jay-Z serves drinks over at the series. Jay-Z, what's a bucket of fun?
You mean just a drink?
Yeah.
We have a pretty cheap drink. We have the highest alcohol pour in the city compared to our prices.
No, a bucket of fun is a specific drink from back in the day. I don't see
anywhere. That's why I asked.
Myers Dark and OJ.
Oh.
Talk about a sugar bomb.
Yeah, seriously, that'll shoot you. Diabetic. That'll put you in the hospital.
Would not be for a diabetic. So, Steph, you're a market person but has a job away from the market now, so you just observe when you can. What do you make of the last few weeks? We've got the news is all over the place. We've got right wingers winning someplace. Remember this guy in Brazil was ranting about gays in his acceptance speech?
Yeah, he sure was.
What is with these people?
We're in scary times. Why everyone needs to be against someone? I just don't understand. Can't we win on, some items and issues that actually matter to people? Not just, I don't like those people,
I think the answer is no.
Apparently not, because it seems to be pervasive around the world at this moment. Yeah, and so Trump, you saw he announced this morning now he's going to write an executive order to go against, what's it, the 14th Amendment for granting rights to natural-born citizens.
Yeah, how did he get in?
Well, let's talk to the Russians. I'm sure they know.
Yeah, they probably know. The politics of hate have always had a place. And it's always interesting that it's in economic bad times.
We're not in economic bad times. So I agree. There are a lot of people who are still hurting in this country, and I totally understand that and respect that. There are a lot of people that are left behind, but this kind of rhetoric is not helping them. They're not making any more money.
It comes... How do I put this? There's always somebody... Kevin hates it when I do this, but it's the example we all know, and I refuse to, go out to the part about concentration camps and those kinds of things. But the message that Hitler had, that Mussolini had, Stalin now, because Stalin that was just a an armed takeover kind of over there. I don't think Stalin ever had much of a message, but these other guys were duly elected in Mussolini and Hitler, right?
Yeah, I know.
So your message is always that somebody else, it's
Your downfall is a result of somebody else.
It's very difficult to walk into whatever neighborhood you're in or beer hall you're in, especially if you're in a beer hall and people have a couple of cocktails. It's very difficult to walk in and say, the reason why you're not doing as well as you think you are is A, you're lazy, B, you didn't go to school like you should have, and C, we have these programs and you haven't gotten your ass off the sofa to take any one of the programs. You really don't get that far with that kind of a message. Politically.
That's true.
Even though in some ways it could be the truth. I mean, not generally, because most people aren't all that lazy.
Right.
But if you walk in and say, you know, you're the hardest working people I've ever met, and the reason why you're not doing so hot is because of these Jewish people. Okay? They've got all the money. Did you ever see a Jewish person in a foxhole with you in World War One? Well, chances are there are probably all kinds of Jewish people in a foxhole, but it's not the, once you're on a roll, you're like Belushi, right?
Right.
And, and they still got the money, you know, blah, blah, blah. You see the bankers get harmed, they're still doing fine. By the way, they're all, you can run, actually what you say and the way you say it, it's probably 90% accurate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Jewish people were the bankers, okay?
And maybe, traditionally and been and their role for
and since
long
they
time.
Were doctors and lawyers, they probably didn't serve in the same percentage in the foxhole as the other people. Same way here. People whose parents have money don't find their way into the military as well as the other people. Take President Bonespur, for instance. So 90% of it is some string of contrived facts, but they are facts. But the conclusion is what's messed up. You know, we have to take their money, we have to this, we have to that. Are people coming across the border from Honduras, why would that be an issue in Wyoming? These people are rapists, we don't want somebody coming over here, these Muslims. I mean, look at the Homeland Security Act. I mean, what a travesty.
99% of Honduras is Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, and my numbers may be slightly off, but for the most part, I mean, all of South America is Catholic. So, you know, the fact that we keep having this Muslim discussion just absolutely blows my mind. Yes, there are some people that could be walking across the border from Canada. Half of everyone who came over in 9/11 was from Muslim and came over from Canada, not from the South. I mean, they can walk over the border anyway. They can fly in. They can boat in.
We had 17 of the 19 people or something were from Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And we're selling them $450 billion worth of arms.
Correct. And we're like supporting their war in Syria. So, you know, it is what it is.
You do have to wonder who's really running the place. But when people let themselves be jostled like this, I said the other day, Steph, that we could take 5,000 people, Honduras, and matter of fact, I'd love to do this if I had, you know, a bunch of dough. I guarantee you, if I drop them in Inglewood in a spot where there's houses are all down, the place looks like, you know, a war zone, a temporary house bought up in two or three abandoned schools, and they got showers and stuff in there. I'm going to say in 2 years, you have a productive neighborhood, the houses are all up. You would never guess there was a problem with any of those people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're going to be more hardworking and more, thankful about having a safe place to be than, you know, half of the people that already live here. So I agree. And, you know, traditionally, if you look at economics, and you can look at Sweden at the moment, Sweden's going through a huge, their economy is just booming. And part of it is because they have really let a lot of immigrants in from around the world into Sweden, and it's really changed the dynamics of their economy. They've got a lot different, a different thought. Got a lot of people coming into jobs that other people didn't want to do, and it's really made a big difference in their economy, and that's kind of what this country's been built on. This country's been built on bring us the best, the brightest, and we will innovate, right? And the best, the brightest don't come in at
this
point.
I'm not so sure that my Irish parents were the best or the brightest. My Irish ancestors turned out okay for everybody, but, you know, this is not like we're the bleeding heart liberal show where if 4 million people show up out of Mexico tomorrow, we want everybody across the border. Having an adjacent border does complicate things.
Oh, for sure.
And there's no question about that. Now, do we want some crazy right winger to be in Mexico now? I mean, I'm saying, I guess my point was economic hardship or a question of point of view. There's people who make $200,000 a year and look at somebody who's making $300,000 and thinking they're being deprived.
Right.
So it's not a question of you and I looking at somebody and saying, well, gee, in the 20s, the people in Germany couldn't even eat. And by the way, they had to get paid in the morning because the money was depreciating during the day. Okay. It's not that, okay, but it's all a question of point of view and who gets ahead of somebody else. It has nothing to do with absolute, do you have a toilet, do you have lunch? You know, it's not.
Oh, completely, you know.
It has nothing to do with that. I mean, that's what's so bizarre. It's why most revolutions are not when people basically don't have a pot to pee in. It is when things start to get better and they're not moving fast enough and some people are moving faster than others. I mean, they never start. When everybody if you have no wherewithal to revolt, right?
Right. Well, you know, if you're just trying to exist, you don't have the energy to revolt.
Right. That's actually it.
But yeah, no, and I'm definitely not for 4,000 people walking across our border. I don't think that there needs to be legal process and a right way to enter and join the nation for sure. But, you know, our immigration policies are so messed up that it is practically impossible to get in here legally. Years and years and years you wait, unless you're going through some kind of amnesty program. And
even that's up to like 2 years.
Exactly. And so, you know, if you're in a country where you're literally, you know, every day you're fearing for your life, are you going to sit there and wait for 2 years in that environment? Or are you going to walk a couple thousand miles?
Well, the sad part in it is, you know, we could talk about this, and we probably need a few more people that know more about it than you and me, but I think, and I'm surely not one of these that all the problems of the world are necessarily ours. But there's no question we are part of virtually every. There isn't a war anywhere that we don't have our fingers in some way. And I read somewhere, Steph, and I should know the numbers, but I brought it up. There's something like 20 million, 8 million, 15 million refugees all around the world wandering from place to place. I mean,
I think there's more than that.
There's everybody out of Syria, an awful lot of people out of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all kinds. Afghanistan, there's all kinds of them. Yemen.
Yep.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, the powers of the world set this in motion somehow. I mean, not always our fault, but somebody's fault. It isn't our fault. It's going to be Russia's fault. I mean, somebody's fault. We set this in motion, and then you say, well, wait a minute. We can only take like 200. Oh, okay, fine. If it wasn't for Jordan, what were they taking? 2 or 3 million? If it wasn't for them, what would the rest of the world do with all these people coming out of Iraq and Syria?
Yeah, well, also the Middle East is going through a huge drought, which is also a big problem, and part of the reason why everyone is moving out of the region is it's not just war, but it's also they literally cannot feed nor water their people. And so, you know, it's mass migration partly because of that. People who could sustain their own lives, you know, could work on their own land. You know, when there's no water, you can't work on your own land. There's nowhere to go. So you got to leave or you're going to die from starvation.
Well, Fari keeps talking about that the global warming in the Middle East, it's already gets to be 125 or something. He goes, if it gets to be 130, 135, humans can't live there.
Correct.
So we could, you know, he says some of those places, what are those things they call
Bahrain?
Them?
There's
9 of them.
Oh, you mean the Arab Emirates?
Yeah, because you won't be able to live there.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
And, you know, Saudi would be about as bad because you can't even, it's already, some days are 127. It gets to the point where humans can't even exist. And,
even with air conditioning.
But you wonder, you know, where is the leadership? Are we going to constantly drop back to this right wing, just not in my place, isolationist, you know, we just hate everybody kind of thing? We've done that before. I mean, we did it before.
It was not successful before.
And wars came out, the other one. I wish we had, we need a Solomon and we don't have one. And I don't see one on the horizon. I mean, I don't see one on the Democratic Party. I mean, somebody can just come out and say, we're going to stop all this stuff. We're going to use our head. We're going to be building in some of these other places because we don't want, you know, 8 million people walking across the border here. I mean, the solution is, obviously, some place that's okay to live in Honduras. Some place that's okay to live in El Salvador, right?
Yeah, well, when your executive branch is discussing being a nationalist, which has huge connotations back to Nazism,
yep.
you know, and then he's arguing that being a nationalist against being a globalist, which he's not using the terminology right, and you're not sure whether he's using the terminology correctly because he either doesn't know or because those are just kind of the key words that he likes to key in on to get his followers to be all riled up, right, without being blunt about it. I'm just not really sure where we're going, and I really hope this next election just puts some balance back into our political party.
When you say balance, if it all just means is 4 years of him screaming and yelling at the other side because he can't do anything, we've had three presidents in a row that have done nothing, in my mind. We really can't have... We need this guy to shape up, because I don't want him out or anything like that, but I mean, he needs to... But when you say...
But he's not... He's an animal of a... He's a one-shade animal, right? One color, right?
Yep.
There's not... He's not going to shape up. There's no change. So the only thing you've got at the moment is control, right? And the control is control the space he can play in, right? Because there isn't. And unless he's going to get impeached, which it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Oh, God, you'd rather have
moment.
Mike Pence?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, he's clearly a yes guy at this point, but B, he basically took Indiana to its knees, and C, he's so conservative that probably I will be wearing a headscarf and not be driving by the end of this, but, you know, and that's a little extreme. He's not quite that bad, but nevertheless,
I'll just say, I don't really want a president from Southern Indiana. I know that that's a stretch, but I guess my point on the nationalism versus globalism, and I think people who responded as, I'll leave you kind of with one thought, is that it's not 1910 anymore. When all your companies are global, the country can't be nationalistic.
Right. Well, it can't be correct. It can't try and isolate itself.
You can't isolate yourself when a lot of your business either comes from overseas or is going overseas. I mean, because how do you do that?
Right. We don't live, on a daily basis, our population is communicating all over the world, and it's not just for business. You've got people who live here, who talk to relatives, spend half the day on the cell phone, you know, chatting with family and friends from wherever they came from. So, I mean,
Steph, when you states' rights, and again, I'm not somebody who says we should get rid of states' rights or anything. I'm ready to shuck the Electoral College, although I will say that I'm in the middle on that. I would go for every legislative district votes, and you get one electoral person out of there. I'd do something like that rather than a full electoral college. General. I'd go halfway and like try it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying is, all you have to do, go to New York. We should probably go the other way because it's faster. Go to New York and fly to San Francisco and fly over all the states. It takes you six hours.
You're going to go to New York to fly to San Francisco?
Well, I'm saying, but you realize that the totality of the place.
Oh.
And you look down and you say, okay, out of the right side of the aircraft, marijuana is legal. On the left side, it's life imprisonment. And you go, wait a minute.
Right.
Sure looks to me like one country. It's not that I want the federal government making local laws, but at least understand that we are sort of one country. And for the guy, for somebody to lean back, well, our forefathers said that guys from South Dakota vote counts more 50 times more than people, and they must have had some reason for it. We just got to go with it. No, you don't. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, do we even know what the guy was thinking when he was dead? I mean, how do we know? I mean, the fact is, they prepared us. They were worried about tyranny of the majority. So they protected for it. They didn't do so hot against tyranny and minority. Would you ever have dreamed one state? Well, I guess, how much bigger in those days do you think Pennsylvania was than Rhode Island? Actually, you know what?
It was huge.
I'm going to say that, one of the biggest lies there is?
Yeah.
Is there were 13 colonies. There were only 12.
Yeah, the other one was not, didn't have voting rights, right?
No, well, Rhode Island was it Rhode Island or Delaware? One of them was not a colony, but they became a state. So there were 13 states. There weren't 13 colonies. There were only 12. Hmm. Little known favorite college rule, as they say.
Is this like Texas? Texas is the only state that can fly their flag at the same level as the United States flag?
They also have a further limit out into the water than anybody else.
Yeah, and they're the only state that can legally secede.
Maybe they should.
Well, their economy wouldn't survive.
Our conservative buddies we hang around with, when I was giving them the argument about the 50 votes versus one in California, you know who I'm talking about, they both said, well, we wouldn't mind if California left.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. It's what, a third of our economy?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Something like that.
And the reason why, Abraham Lincoln, on the other hand, during a war, decided to build a railroad across the country, which nobody even knew we could do, only to connect them so they wouldn't leave. So Abraham Lincoln was doing anything to keep them, and our buddies want to get rid of them. Who do you think is smarter?
Well, the guy with the tall hat.
Yeah, the guy with the tall hat might have been a little cleverer. Yeah, you never know. I mean, but people have really, really, really odd views to keep their... All I would hope is that people keep listening. And I know I have an awful lot of friends that are seriously conservative and Trump supporter. I'm saying, don't close your mind. Watch what's going on and be aware of it. And maybe someday you change your mind, maybe someday you don't. But don't pull your hands over your ears like you used to with your mom and say, I can't hear you, for God's sake. SP Futures up 650. Be right back. Mr. Joel Oncon and Stocks and Jackets.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomas. She's Stephanie Cohen. Jay-Z on the board on a rare Tuesday appearance because she has a guest at 7 o'clock. SP Futures up 11 now. Dow Futures up 87. NASDAQ up 26. We're trying to make somewhat of a bounce after yesterday's, I'm going to say, unbelievable day. I mean, it's been probably one of the wildest ones I've seen in my entire time here. DAX down 32.2. Europe is steady. Dow only down 32.3%. FTSE up 11.2%. CAC around down 17.3%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 307, 1.4%. Shanghai up 25, 1%. Hang Seng down 226. That's a whole 1%. It's bizarre over there. The Hang Seng and Shanghai have been kind of going different directions a lot lately. Not sure why. Oil down 37 cents, 66.67. Brent down 53, 76.81. So much for the night. Brent was like almost $90 a few weeks ago. Natural gas, 318, down from the 324 higher. High, RBOB gas, 182. And we've got gold, is down 390. It's kind of slinking back down here, gold as well. Silver down 2 cents, not sure why that is. Nobody seems to like precious metals. We don't like oil. We don't like anything. What do you have for us, Trevi? Weather sports, Jay-Z.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Weather in Chicago today is mostly cloudy with a high of 65, low of 47. Phoenix is mostly sunny with a high of 85, low of 59. In Monday Night Football, the Patriots beat the Bills 25-6. Anyone see that epic sign one of the Bills had in his hands? Either of you?
No.
It was so funny. It was really just a piece of printer paper that said, "The Patriots cheat." And everyone on Twitter was making fun of it. Like,
well,
how much
Patriots
did that graphic
have had
cost?
A long history of that.
Yeah. In basketball last night, the Warriors beat the Bulls 149-124. The Warriors scored 92 points on the Bulls in the first half, which is the second most ever scored in the first half in NBA history. Suns were off, and there was a fatal car accident on 79th Street between Cottage Grove and Greenwood Avenue. Road is closed for investigation, and there's nothing else to report. Back to you.
So, Steph, I'm going to say they were going over 30 miles an hour.
Probably.
I'm just saying, you know, you don't normally kill yourself at 30 miles an hour, but I guess you could. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Chief, how you doing this morning?
I'm still kind of reeling from yesterday. A couple trades I didn't make that I'd be which. I mean, I had a call and a put that I was thinking about buying at 12 cents. One traded 390, then went out worthless. And then the other one closed at 90 cents. And I didn't buy either one of them.
104 point range in the December futures. They jacked it up in the morning and then took it down in the afternoon. And I ended up settling mid-range. We do have some green on the screen this morning. I mean, am I stepping out here by saying we might have an inside day here? We just need to, the market just needs to calm down a little bit. Our average daily range now, our 9-day average range is going to be 60 points. So the best thing for this market would just be a couple of days of just consolidation and bulls and bears squaring up. I don't know if we're going to get that. We wicked bounce off the low yesterday. We're 53 handles above that low at 2603 yesterday. So for the bulls, you just need this market just to calm down a little bit.
Well, you have your buddy Kramer last night was ranting and raving about the Fed. I think he's way out of line there, but that's just me. But that's not going to stop them. And
there's a lot more going on than just the Fed right now, Chief. I mean, I think you know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's earnings, there's international trade tensions, there's, you know, domestic turmoil. There's a lot of things that are going on. It's just not, it's not all about the Fed.
We have a, real quick, we have a question in a second, but Joel, I want to ask you before we do get a question. You and I have talked on several occasions, and I've talked about it with Kenny, the market fabric right now, and I'm going to say, I won't say exclusive, but emphasized by the FANGs. Stocks that don't split, they're not held by people necessarily, not to say that nobody owns them, some people own them, I know that, but they're 80% institutionally owned, which means that either hedge funds own them, pensions fund own them, or ETFs or something like that. That the phenomenon is you keep, Amazon keeps running up, the people in these funds, in order to keep a balance, you have to keep buying more and more and more on the way up. And now we've seen Amazon and this stock, you know, all we did was hear people trumpeting like a goose, and the thing went over, you know, $1 trillion, but the thing's down 25% in what, 5 weeks? 4 weeks? 3 weeks? We traded at 2050 not that long ago, and yesterday it's 1530. So, a tremendous drop. And yesterday you see the Google doing the same thing, Netflix, Facebook is basically on its ass as well. Now, is part of this, what you're talking about, all these things going on, Joel, is part of this weirdo market fabric we have now that is, as Amazon starts going down, people have to sell more and more of Amazon because it becomes a less and less percentage in the QQQ and all the other ETFs?
I can't disagree with that. I mean, it's, you know, with the all the ETFs and the, you know, the index funds, sure, that's a part of it. They have to, you know, redo the asset allocation. I think a little bit of your problem, you know, what you're kind of alluding to here is market structure. You know, market makers in stocks like that are, you know, fewer. They, first of all, they don't really make market off the open. They disappear off the close. So there's just, you know, you take out the, you know, the investing public, and then you take out, you know, bona fide market makers that are committed. I mean, they'll make a market when they can sniff out an order in their size.
Right.
But if there's no order, you know, they have no affirmative obligation to make market. And so when you get these kind of vacuums, some comes in with, you know, a couple hundred thousand to sell on Amazon, and they pick a price, or they go to the market, the bots sniff it out, and that's why you're getting, you know, that's why you get these wicked reactions in these high-priced stocks. I mean, I follow it, but it's like, for me, there's just no interest in trading like an Amazon or a Google or things like that, because, you know, it's almost impossible, unless, you know, just trading small size for day traders, you know, for active day traders to have, you know, good risk rewards. Spreads are a couple, I don't know. I bet you that thing probably goes $5-6 wide a lot. And
oh,
when
sure.
It gets really crazy, it goes $10. So there's no edge. And when you get done on your orders, you know, when you get done on your buy, you know the market's rolling over. So, I agree with you on that point.
Well, we did some stuff for some people yesterday in the markets. I mean, I've been, you know, this is not new. I've been railing about them the whole time, and it's, The lack of market makers, the lack of order flow providers, there's no centralized customer order book anymore, which used to be a stabilizer as well. There is none of that. So, I mean, literally, we put stuff in and we do about as good a job as anybody, Joel, because we can go to the different exchanges instead of just one,
yep,
which nobody can. Just so you might be 40-cent bid for an option, and it's 35.40, and you don't even get filled. The minute you get filled, it's 46 bid. So literally, you're not filled until somebody's already bid through your offer, which, you know, I'm going to say that to me blows. and I'm saying we do a better job than anybody, and still we're shaking our heads at the end of the day. Jay-Z, you had a question?
Yeah, sorry. Kevin tweeted and he said, can't let the Pence took Indiana to his knees pass without asking for an explanation. By what measures? I know it was a while back.
Well, most people didn't think he was going to be reelected as governor.
Yeah, in fact, most of Indiana seemed to be pleased, or was at least said that Indiana was quite pleased that he was being taken on the national level, so that he was not going to be a part of Indiana.
I think what Kevin's alluding to is during his tenure in Indiana, they made pretty progressive strides on balancing the budget and those kinds of things. Now, this was after 2008.
Got it.
But I think that he did really, shall we say, fiscally, what Illinois has been unable to do. And Indiana's in way better shape than, like, Illinois and a bunch of other places. So, to be fair, I think he deserves those kind of kudos, or at least the time he was in office, he and the legislature together did what Illinois didn't, and it's probably a fair way to look at it. Is that, Joel, you're close to the action over there. Would you say that's a fair statement?
I think I'll just have to pass on that one.
All right. Well, I mean, your guy in Indiana and Michigan sort of the same thing, right? The governor up there did a pretty, compared to the time before, now obviously a lot of things with the Detroit and everything else, there's a lot.
Right.
You can't just say one person did everything right and the guy before wrong, because there's usually a whole lot of things going on in the two different places. Hey, are we talking about a Northwestern Michigan Big Ten playoff?
You know what? I'm not going to put the cart before the horse. We got the Penn State Nittany Lions coming in. We're 10.5 point favorites, Chief. That's a lot of points.
That's a lot.
You know, everyone goes from, you know, bashing on Michigan. Now they're the greatest thing. I just like to try and keep it even keel. I hope we win by one, win our couple other games, and then we got the showdown in Columbus. So we'll see. I don't know what's going on the other side of the division. Purdue stomps Ohio State and then falls to Michigan State. So, I don't know. We got to take care of business on our end and then move forward.
We talking about bad drugs? Some weeks they're good. Some weeks they're not so good.
I don't know what's going on. I hear there's a rumor that Urban Meyer is going to step down at the end of the year, but I'm sure that doesn't hope that doesn't happen until we get a chance to beat them a few times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now though, if you guys win and Northwestern continues to do well,
yep.
isn't that the two first place teams, right?
Yep, and I think, I mean, they both have some big games coming up, so we'll just play it. We'll see if we can, take, as Harbaugh says, we'll take one week at a time.
Yeah, well, he's not the first to say that, just taking them one at a time. That was the guy in a Major League, Bull Durham. Just taking them one day at a time, whatever the team wants. He's learning his cliches, right?
yeah, that's all about. The market's about cliches and so sports.
That's right. Joel, take care of yourself, buddy. Go Blue.
All right, go Blue.
SP Futures still up 11. We'll be right back. Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters.
the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures trading recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Arnold. She's Stephanie Cohen, Jay-Z on the board. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcari, and we're just, S&P futures are up 10, NASDAQ futures up 27, Dow futures up 76. We're trying to bounce back from a wild day yesterday. We're just talking about Kenny watching the underwear commercial and CNBC about the guy and his wife are in such good shape. They're their own models in the commercial. How many couples do you know that would be happy doing that, Kenny?
I did. I know one or two, but I missed that commercial. What, they just put it on? I missed it.
I'll have to
go back and see what they're doing. But I don't know too many couples. I know a couple of couples that might be comfortable doing it.
No, I don't need to hire a model. Just use my wife. By the way, I don't need a model either. Just use me. I don't think you'd want me in there.
You're not going to want to see me, trust me.
Oh, God. You'd go before me. Let's put it that way.
I would go before you. Listen, never seen a camera I didn't love, right? But I would go before you, probably.
The young ladies who you were nice enough to bring around the New York Stock Exchange were letting me know, God, he gestures a lot. And I said, yeah, he does.
I talk with my hands. I can't help it. It's an Italian thing.
I got to ask you a question. Do you do it while you're on the phone?
Do I talk? Yes, I do. Well, one hand I'm holding the receiver. The other hand is, moving as I'm talking. You know, if you could see me now, you'd see that my hand was moving. You'd see my hand is moving. I can't help it. It's just what it is.
The guy in the OEX pit who was right across the aisle from me, Teddy, forgot his name, he was so Italian, one of the nicest guys. And he'd be on the phone talking with the other hand's going, Teddy, he can't see you. I'd say to him. Anyway, how many days have you seen like yesterday, Kenny? Was that wild or what?
Listen, I got to tell you, it was a little bit out of control, and it happened. The speed at which it happened, I think, is what is what continues to astonish people. You know that we had a 918 point swing from plus 350 in the morning to minus 562 by the time we hit bottom, and actually created a third new low in this sell off series that you and I have been talking about. That new lows beget new lows, and that if the market tests it and it fails, it's going to create another new low, which it did 2 days ago, and then it tested it again and failed. It created another new low, and I'm not necessarily sure it's completely over. I think there's actually one more low to come, and I think that low is going to be the February low of 25.32, which is kind of ugly because that's down another 100 points from where we are now on the S&P. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see that one last kind of flush lower and try to shake them all out. But no, you don't see too many of those days. But again, I think what's important for people to understand is the speed at which it happens and the technology that allows it to happen doesn't create the sense of panic. If this had happened, 20 years ago when there were 5,500 people, then the mood and the tone and the noise would have been so much greater. But because it's so automated now, it's just kind of a quiet hum, and there's not that sense of panic. I don't know if that's good or bad. But I'm just, trying to relay that there's not that sense of panic. Now, individual people might be panicking on their own. They might be going, oh, my God, and looking at their portfolio and having a nervous breakdown. But I think it's absolutely the wrong time to panic because I think it's about run its course. But that's just me.
You sound a little bit like Otter in Animal House, another new low.
Well, but look, we did, right? We had three new lows in the last 3 weeks. So the first break was when we broke the 200-day back in the early October and created that low at 2710, and then you and I talked about it, and you know, the market bounced off and rallied, and everyone thought, you know, it was a one-time event. I go, I don't think so, because we had broken technically, right? We had broken through all the supports, the 50, 100, and 200, and that's what made this story different. If we had made a new low, if we had made a low from, you know, from trading up, but we were within the bands of support, I'd say, okay, maybe. But once we broke those bands of support, the whole story, the whole narrative changes, and because the market thrashes around it, now it's looking for a low. It's looking for a place that can find support. And, you know, in this case, new lows beget new lows, which is exactly what we've seen over the last 3 weeks, right? We've got three new lows, and my sense is, like I said, I think it's not done yet. But I also don't think it's a reason to panic. I think you have to let it test. And then as we get through the elections, I think we're going to go into a strong, powerful year-end Santa Claus rally, not necessarily taking us to the highs again at 2950, but certainly off these levels where we are now.
Ah, so that explains. I was going to ask you, so why the February timeline? I think you just explained that.
Why the what?
February timeline, but I think you just explained that.
Yeah, I think that once we get through the midterms, because I think the midterms are causing, you know, now we're through earnings, I think the midterms are causing a lot of angst, because although the expectation is that the Dems take the House and the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, and if that happens, you'll have gridlock and the market doesn't mind gridlock and things will stabilize. I think, though, it has to get through that. I think people are so unnerved recently that anything could happen that, you know, they're not sure. What if the Dems take control of the whole place? You know, then that changes the story dramatically, and I think the market once again sells off fairly violently. And if the Republicans maintain control, which I also don't think is going to happen, I think then the market takes off. So I think the best case is the split, which is what the market is expecting. And I think if we get that, then the market stabilizes. And then they start talking about Cyber Monday and Black Friday and holiday shopping and who's going to benefit. Amazon's going to soar and FedEx and UPS are going to deliver all these packages. And they're hiring, you know, thousands of temporary workers because, you know, everyone's going to spend $10 billion on the holidays and all that story. And then you're going to get the market to rally into the end of the year. Look, people supposedly spent $9 billion on Halloween. Right, think about that for a minute. I just think about that number is amazing to me, is that they were making predictions that U.S., that Americans spent $9 billion on pumpkins and costumes and candy and crap. It's unbelievable to me that kind of money. So if they're spending $9 billion on Halloween, think about what they're going to spend on Hanukkah and Christmas.
What do you think, right? Your buddy Dr. J spent on his adult Spider-Man costume?
I didn't see a Spider-Man costume. Do we have a copy of that?
He's got it. There's a million pictures over there. They're all taking pictures.
I'll have
over
to look on his Instagram.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be. A question, Kenny. You're my confidant in the industry. We've seen this Amazon get taken apart. We've seen some of these other ones. How much of what you and I have talked about, market fabric, is causing some of this? And you know what? When you see this thing bouncing around like this, you talk about the electronics. I'm going to say, the electronics combined with the fact that since there's 15 different exchanges for no reason at all, is there a standing order anywhere? I'm saying no.
See, and that's the other thing I think that a lot of people don't necessarily understand. I think a lot of people on the outside still seem to think that it all happens on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And why is it out of control, and why does it do that? In fact, it doesn't, and you hit the nail on the head. First of all, there's more than 15. There might be 11 exchanges, but there's probably 30-plus alternative venues, right? The internalization engines, because every one of the big investment banks has it. Goldman, Citibank, First Boston, Deutsche Bank, UBS, they all have their own internalization engines, which further, in my opinion, weaken the public markets because it takes order flow out of the public markets, keeps it in the dark, and just trades amongst a small group of people, which I think is baloney. But, you know, you could thank the SEC and their infinite wisdom for saying, oh, yeah, we think that's a good idea. Yeah. In my opinion, they should all be taken away. But they're big money makers for these banks, and the banks go down to Washington, they hire lobbyists, they sleep with both sides of the aisle, they keep everybody happy, and so it's not going away. So as long as everyone understands that, then they have to understand why the increase in volatility. And as the automation gets more and more sophisticated and there's less and less people, I think we haven't even begun to see the swings that are potentially possible in trading. I think this is just a taste of what's
to come. I completely agree.
Kenny, what has to happen, Steph, what has to happen to fix it? I mean, the three of us, and Steph has been in the markets a long time too, we all know this blows. And yet, why can't we even get a voice anywhere? I mean,
because because I think they let that genie out of the bottle, yep. And I think that the tech industry and you know the tech traders are such a powerful group. They get down to Washington and they like I said, they hire these lobbyists, even the big banks, because listen, say what you want about the big banks, but they're all about technology. They're wiping out the human beings. Look, what's Goldman got? 5 people left on their trading desk, as per that article in Business Insider. It's all algorithmic. It's all quant guys. They're all physicists and engineers. Not one of them's got a business degree, but yet they know how to write a computer program. And so, therefore, you know, they're spending a lot of money. They get out of Washington. They sleep with both sides of the aisle, and they pay them off. So I don't think it's going anywhere. Like I said, I think it's only going to get more and more sophisticated as the technology does, which is only going to allow the swings to become more violent, in my opinion.
Well, the technology, this is I've had this fight forever, and I lose every one, so I might as well lose another one. the technology does not stop you from stealing.
No, that's correct.
The idea, if you're going to preference order flows and you're going to have kickbacks for preferencing, you've got a problem, no matter how technical it gets.
I agree.
So you can't start with a bad apple and somewhere through the mechanism of technology turn into a good apple. I mean,
I think you're right.
So how does
I don't think. I don't think technology does anything necessarily to allay anyone's fears that, you know, that people aren't spoofing the market, right? We could never spoof when it was a human-based market. I couldn't spoof. I couldn't make a bid when I wasn't real. I would have gotten arrested and thrown out if I walked into a crowd and said, yeah, I'll pay $2,400 when I really had no order and I was trying to get everyone to, you know, run ahead of me and take the stock because
right.
I was really a seller and I wanted people to jump up and make a sale. So if I go in and say I'm a buyer, the buyers get nervous. They start taking stock. If I ever did that, first of all, I would have been arrested. I would have thrown in jail. I would have been blackballed from the industry. But today, you know, the spoofing stuff, they say, well, no, it's not really spoofing because these guys are
yeah.
willing to buy it. No, they're not really willing to buy it. The speed at which they can enter and cancel orders is mind-boggling.
Absolutely.
So are they really real? I don't think so. I would argue that till the cows come home.
Kenny, next week let's talk a little about GE and how somebody managed to turn a huge company into zero, for God's sake. Take care, buddy. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 22. Who do we have here for the break, Jay-Z?
Gary Riley Mills.
Gary Riley Mills.
A Pinnacle Performance.
And you're going to introduce him, and you're going to be our host for a second?
For sure.
Okay, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, don't make Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Stephanie Koenig. She's Jay-Z on the board. We're putting the whip to it a little bit here. We got the S&P futures up 11 now. We got the Dow futures up 126. We had the NASDAQ futures up 42. We nowhere near as high as we were yesterday, and then we come flying down from there. Jay-Z, how about introducing our guest, since you're the one who invited our gentleman friend here?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's welcome Gary Riley Mills, the co-founder and COO of the Pinnacle Performance Company. Gary, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Gary, how are you? You've helped us out dramatically because our girl Jessica started out as just helping out on the board once in a while. Now she's doing better and better and better. And last week she said, I heard this guy, Gary, talking. He was really good. And I said, well, Jay-Z, you're an assistant producer. Ask him out. Really? I can do that? Yeah, go ahead. And then she went and did it. And here you are. And I'm proud of her and happy to have you.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much. She's, by the way, a fantastic storyteller.
No kidding.
Thank you.
Have you ever known anybody to put more words in a day than her, you think?
It's impressive.
Yes.
I worked with her one day, and I got to see some really cool stuff.
And, you know about her, the entire life story of about 40 people?
Exactly.
So I went through your website and everything, and I can't agree more. One of the gentlemen who's on the air with us 2 days a week is now, I don't know, he's not exactly a dean, but he's head of a department at Junior College in Indiana, and I'm sure he's listening, Kevin O'Neill, terrific guy, and he talks about leadership and everything in his classes and how to actually be, you know, become an executive, how do you get people to do stuff, team concepts and everything, and he says Sure. He ends up having to spend a real lot of time, which is what you guys do, in communication and so forth, and you guys should probably talk because guys, I read your stuff. You're so right, but I'll let you talk. Everybody always hears me talk. How did you get started in this? And obviously, it's a fertile field. People always want to be able to. It's not what you say is what people hear, obviously.
Right, and whatever field you are in, communication and having an objective, having something you're going after is essential. So, about 13 years ago, my co-founder and I of Pinnacle Performance Company, David Lewis. Dave actually is the one who came up with the concept. You know, my background was as a professional actor, so I used to do TV and film and theater. And David also had produced some films and did some acting, and he owned an acting school, and he approached me because I worked at that acting school, and he said to me, hey, I want to create a communication skills company that teaches executives all the things that we know and take for granted as professional actors, how to use your voice, your body language, your gestures, your facial expressions, how to listen, how to have an objective you're going after, how to prepare for a big presentation or meeting. He said because he worked on Wall Street, he worked in Silicon Valley, and he had hired a lot of companies to do that, and they were all really expensive, and none of them did a very good job at it. And so he said, let's build something from scratch that's really fun and it's really experiential, So it's a kind of training that people love going to because it's immediately applicable to their roles to improve their performance, driving more sales, building better teams, building trust. And so we started this out about 13 years ago, and it just took off because there's not really anything like it. And so now we work with, you know, the who's who of Fortune 500 companies around the world. We're in 50 countries around the world training executives. I'm actually headed to Transylvania next month for the first time.
Are you going to go to the Emperor's Castle?
I am, of course.
Really?
How could you not?
I know. Hey, take some pictures. But I'd love to see them. That'd be spectacular. Yeah. Well, you're going on, Halloween. That'd be better.
I was going to say, you're about a month off.
Yeah. Back to the acting part. I never thought of that. When Jay-Z sent me your bio, I'm thinking, yeah, here's guys that obviously, to be a good actor, you have to communicate. You have to know how to speak. People have to hear what you say. I never realized, but until I read it, of course, there's a crossover here. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and of course. And throughout history, if you read the first book, The Pin Drop Principle, or this new book that we wrote called The Bullseye Principle, that's a follow-up, is in there we lay out all these stories of great leaders through history who have used acting coaches to sharpen their communication, to help them become the powerful, influential leaders that they eventually became. They all had acting coaches somewhere along the road, whether it's John F. Kennedy, whether it's Robert Kennedy, whether it's the Clintons, whether it's Trump, whether it's anybody, they dipped into the toolbox of professional actors. And it goes all the way back to Demosthenes, who was the greatest of the Greek orators back in ancient Greece. He used the actor satirist, and satirist taught him all the tools of the professional actor, and that's how Demosthenes became a great speaker.
And is it just instinct, or is it trial and error, or what is it?
Yeah, a lot of it is learning some of these tools. How does an actor use their gestures? How does an actor listen? How does an actor use body language and facial expressions and positioning and movement? All those things that we study at Acting Conservatory in the pinnacle trainings, we can teach those to somebody very, very quickly. The first exercise we do when we get into a room with executives is we do a quick exercise, we tape it, and then we play it back, and we're able to point out, here's where you have nervous energy in your body. See the we call them pacifiers. You have pacifiers in your pelvis. See how you're leaning back and forth. And you have pacifiers in your hands. See that nervous rubbing of your hands. That takes away from your executive presence. So let's start by redoing that. Let's get rid of those two things. Let's lock your pelvis in. Let's release that tension in the hands so we can really focus on you and the message you're trying to get across. And so it's just building block by building block. We start to improve performance and executive presence. So by the end of a one-day session or two-day session, they're transformed. Their communication is completely different. Or getting rid of verbal viruses, the ahs and the ums.
So then, our listeners, if they had one thing they could take away from this conversation about one of the things they could use or do to improve their communication or their ability to take seem authoritative, what would you say?
So here's a three-step process, very simple, anybody can use it. This is what we call the pinnacle method. Number one, before any meeting, presentation, or communication, you have to analyze your audience. Who am I talking to? What do they know? What do they not know? What are they looking to get out of this meeting or this presentation or this interview? So that's number one, analyze your audience. Second step, you have to understand how you want them to feel as a result of hearing your message, attending your meeting, listening to your pitch. How do I want them to feel? And more importantly, what do I want them to do as a result? Do I want them to sign this contract? Do I want them to show up to work on time? Do I want them to be more aligned with their team? You have to understand that. And the third step, after you've analyzed your audience, after you understand what you want them to do, how you want them to feel, the third step in the process is modifying delivery, which means voice, body language, facial expressions. Everything has to be congruent and aligned so that your message hits the bullseye every time.
Great. So you've obviously taken a lot of people through your course. Can you tell us a great story about a time when either someone made huge improvements or, some kind of example about one of
sure.
the successes you've got?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a myriad of stories that I could tell of people who have grabbed onto something and then transformed. Recently, I was in New York City working in the Freedom Tower and worked with a gentleman who this guy had done TED Talks. This guy was a pallbearer for Mr. Rogers. When Mr. Rogers passed away, he had grown up on the working on the Mr. Rogers show. And he was a seasoned executive and an expert and a great presenter. And after doing that initial videotaping exercise and finding out he had a lot of issues with verbal viruses, he had some issues with some pacifiers that chipped away at his executive presence, he was blown away that just in this short, he thought he was good. He thought he was a perfect speaker. And just with that awareness and him being coachable, we were able to tweak and transform his delivery and his executive presence that, you know, he thought he'd been doing it right for 20 years, and just being able to transform that, it took him to a completely different level. So he was very excited and wrote to me saying, oh man, I'm using all these things in my meetings and presentations.
So do you move on and put the sweater on? This is part of the presentation?
Yes,
you
know, exactly.
You started the whole meeting with a change of outfit?
Right.
Nice.
So you guys, I did a, I could have used a coach. I did a presentation, well not a presentation, they asked me to be on CNBC. So get a load of this. I go over to this room, and it wasn't obvious where the camera was. And they sit you in this chair.
Sure.
And they say, well, the camera's like up there. But over to the side was the monitor. So you kept sort of looking from where you thought the camera was over to the monitor to see if they were going to talk to you next. And I get back to the office, and my significant other, of course, you can always get a shot from them. Who are you, Tricky Dick? You look like a ferret in the corner. Your eyes flashing back and forth. I'm like,
right.
I go, gee, thanks. But it looked just like that because I kept looking back and forth.
Right.
And it wasn't obvious where the camera was. And it was never, I could never see myself. And it made it made it damn near impossible. In my mind, I mean, I went back and I did a little better, but still it was.
Right.
When you can't see yourself, it's tough. But
I think it's the other way around. I hate seeing myself on it. I prefer when I don't know and you just work with the people around you. I think it works much better.
But I have a question, though. I did very small. I mean, it would have, for one of your courses, it would have been half the first lecture. I did 3-4 hours of media training when I ran for the board of the CBO with another fellow. And a lot of what you're saying, I mean, people, the lady who was teaching us was terrific, and a lot of what you're saying. I mean, know what you're saying. If somebody calls you, you're going to call them back. You want to talk to them, but you're going to write down the things you're going to say. You're not just going to waste your time on the air, which you couldn't afford to pay for, saying something stupid.
Right.
All kind of the basics, I think, that you guys would go through. I mean, how do you get from... what you're talking is substance, somebody giving a speech and everything. But when you bring it into the political realm, which I'm sure you do some work in there as well, how do you go from not wasting time getting your message out to being such obviously spin that it sounds awful? I mean, how do you stop people from crossing over into?
Are you talking being authentic or being?
What I'm saying is the way I was taught, well, the one day I was there, is, you know, if somebody comes up with a microphone and they say, hey, Chief, what about your golf game? Well, gee, you know, I can't really play golf now because this is what I'm focusing on, and get your message out. There's a way to, you know, nobody cares about my golf game, right? If I got national TV time that I could never afford to buy. So I got to make sure and turn it around. Well, I'm more worried about, you know, the budget deficit or something. You know, you got to turn it around. But how do you go from turning it around to something meaningful and not cross over the line where you ask me about nuclear disarmament and I'm telling you about something, I don't even answer the question. I stick with my motherhood thing. You know, I mean, how do you?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The main thing is, if you're doing any sort of media, you know, you have a very limited amount of time, right? If you're going to be on CNBC, you're probably not going to be on for more than five minutes,
right?
Or whatever the time is they're giving you. So whatever the points that you want to hit, you got to get to them. So I always start with media training. I always, my, if you remember Rod Blagojevich back in the day, remember our ex-governor? Rod Blagojevich was, our daughters played on the boys and girls soccer team together at the Boys and Girls Club. And so I would see him every Saturday and I'd say, hey, Rod, how's it going? What do you got going this week? And, you know, this is right before the trial and, you know, he had a book that was coming out. He'd say, oh, I'm going to do the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And I'd say, oh, cool, you have a media coach, somebody helping you out? And he'd go, no, should I? I said, yeah, you probably should. And so the advice I gave him is the same advice I'd give everybody. I said, all right, here's the deal. 3 points. What are the 3 points at the end of your interview you want that person to walk away with, that person who watched your interview? And you got to get to those 3 points. And so whatever question they ask you, you may need to answer it quickly and then pivot, but you've got to reinforce those 3 points because time is running out. And eventually he got pretty good at it, where he would go on and do the show, and then I'd see him the next Saturday, and I'd go, all right, I watched it, so was this, this, and this? Were those your 3 points? Good, good. Way to hit those.
But how do you I had my worst interview ever, and I don't know whether you think I'm decent or not at this, but I've gotten a little bit better. I probably could use some coaching, sure. But my worst interview ever was David Stockman, by far.
Uh-huh.
He came in. It wasn't even an interview. He had a 12-minute stump speech. And he must have known that if he call in, like you're calling in, I mean, if you just kept talking, I can't even really interrupt. If you're here, I can.
Right,
but,
right.
And he just kept going. To finally, I'm going, well, that's interesting. but I always want to ask the questions that I know my listeners want the answer to. I mean, Senator Murphy came out and I asked him some real tough question right out of the gate, and he goes, so that's the way you want to play? And I go, well, yeah, because I care about is if you're a politician or something, okay, what are you doing about these four items that my listeners care about? And you know what?
Sure.
You can not answer it or answer it. It's up to you, but I'm going to ask it. I'm not going to, you know.
Yeah, and that's where active listening comes in, right? So somebody who's just going to come on and do their stump speech, that's not going to be alive in the moment like this, where you're asking me a question. I got to be present. Again, that's where professional actors are really good. Because if we're improvising a scene, if we're in the moment, you have to be in the moment. If you are thinking about what's for dinner tonight during a scene on stage at the Goodman Theater, that's a problem, not only for your scene partner, but for the audience, because it's not alive and crackling in the moment. Whereas if someone's asking me a question and I'm actively listening to what that question is, trying to take it in, that's what makes for good interviewing, that's what makes for good communication in the moment.
That's so interesting, because that's one thing that the newbies or the new people that come in and work for me, it's one of the big things that I try and really stress is the active listening. Because I go into so many meetings, I work with so many different people, that active listening is just not a part of, they come in kind of with an agenda, they, you know, work with a client or they are working with a group, and they end up coming out with exactly the same thing that they went in, and they haven't taken anything in from a very educated or group of individuals that has a lot of experience with something that maybe that person who walked in the door didn't have. And so I think active listening for me is probably one of the most important, if not the most important skill that I try and teach young people. It's made a huge difference
true.
In my career.
Stephen Covey, I saw him speak once, and he said something that I've always taken with me and I always try to pass along. He said, here's the problem when it comes to active listening. He said, here's my advice, is what he said. Listen with the intent to understand, not the intent to respond.
Yep.
So that's one of the problems, is people aren't listening. I'm not listening to what you're saying to truly hear you and understand. I'm just waiting for your lips to stop moving so I can put my 2 cents in. I can give my opinion.
Well, you see that in these congressional things, and you see it with the people that ask questions to the head of the Fed, that type of thing. Where,
right.
I mean, our producer Matty Weber said, I mean, to me, I mean, I'm not very good at it because it's not my profession. He goes, but Chief, you're the only guy who doesn't have 5 questions in front, like with you. I mean, I want to go right. Wherever this takes us, and wherever sounds interesting, I'm going to follow up on. He goes, nobody else does that. Everybody has their. You'll say something like, an asteroid's coming up in New York, and an interviewer will say something like, well, what size shoes are those you're wearing? like what?
Right.
And the guy just dropped a bomb on you, and you don't even follow it up. I mean, you sort of need to do that, I think.
Right. And attention spans are changing as well. There's a study that came out I write about in the Bullseye Principle. The number is 2,617. 2,617, that's how many times per day we type, swipe, or tap our screens, our cell phones. So we're that engaged with our screens. If 2,617 times on average, and by the way, if you have kids, it's way more with video games, if that's the average, that's a lot of time we're now not looking our spouse in the eye, we're not giving our full attention to our kid, or we're not engaged with our team because I'm sending this text, sorry, 1 second, I got to send this text to California, they just asked this question.
What would be your first impression of somebody who still has a flip phone?
I love it. I'd have so many questions.
That would be me. I finally got a smartphone a month ago, and I'm going back to the flip phone. I can't stand it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It really is tricky balancing technology with communication. I just got back from China. I did my first TED Talk in Shanghai at the American school there. And by the title of the TED Talk was, Are We Killing Communication? And it's the argument that all this technology, there's some good stuff with it, but there's also some bad things that we're going to really have to be careful about moving forward, because it's changing the way we all communicate and send and receive information with each other.
Well, I was in the Tripoli Tap about 2 years ago, and I don't usually sit this close to people, but it's a Boston crowd, and the Patriots are playing, so you're really close. And this guy next to me had his huge honking cell phone or smartphone, and I could see him typing to the girl at the end of the bar, do you want to come home with me? And I said to him, I go, you know, I don't know you, but I'm an older guy. That's a conversation you might want to have in person.
Right.
He looks at me and he goes, why? If she says no, I can scoot right out the front door. And I go, that's one way of looking at it, but it's not the real man's way. I don't like him.
Exactly.
What do you think?
Now that's all changing. The whole dating with Bumble and Hinge and all these websites, and it's different.
Well, what's your main role? One of the guys who, one guy who bartends near me, he was Scott Benjaminson. I don't know if you know his name. He's a contributor to the show.
I've known Scott for probably 25 years.
Really? I love Scott.
He's a great buddy of mine.
He has all these, very conservative guys at the end of the bar, and he loves it when I come in. At least he's got somebody who can fight with him. Not that I'm that liberal, I'm not, but if they're that conservative, I don't mind. I'll help fight all the time. You know, I'll do that.
Yeah, now Scotty's great. He still does the Rudy. You know, he's one of the brothers on the movie Rudy.
Yep.
He was at, I've known Scott for, 25 years or so.
He was what's-her-name's boyfriend-slash-husband in Chicago PD for a while. Who was the lady who was on Night Court, the real attractive, tells her name.
I
do not know.
You know what I'm talking about. She was the Night Court was on forever.
Yes.
And I forget her name. Jay-Z, why don't you, if you could dig that one up, just put Night Court. But that was the mother of the girl on the Chicago PD, and then Scott was the boyfriend. Mm. And but I know he's a good guy. I love him. And it's a small community, though, isn't it? Don't pretty much all you guys know.
It's a very small community. And the other thing is Pinnacle. So my company, we hire a lot of business savvy actors to do our training around the world. Which is great because I'm working with a lot of, you know, one day one of our trainers might be shooting Star Wars in London, and the next day they're training for us for Pinnacle at Aeon or at, you know, Uber or some big company. So it's cool.
Well, you know, he's into the jiu-jitsu now because his kid's taking it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so he come all of a sudden, I see him, I go, Scott, you're not moving too hot. And he goes, oh, God, the jiu-jitsu last night killed me. So he's doing. So how do people find you? I mean, this is fascinating. I mean, when you say, obviously you have materials, but if somebody who's all of a sudden became chairman of something and something,
yeah,
and really wanted, what is kind of a starter course? Do you kind of look at, I mean, some people, I got to believe, get what you're saying pretty quick and learn pretty fast. Other people probably have no idea what you're talking about until they...
Yeah, so the best way to do it is you can go to Pinnacle Performance Company. You can go to pinper.com, P-I-N-P-E-R.com, and you can check out our offerings. We do private coaching. We do coaching online. We'll do a workshop. I'll come in and speak. You can pick up Bullseye Principle on Amazon. You can read a lot of that for free on Amazon if you want to check it out. And the most exciting thing right now, Jess was actually there for the pilot of this, is I am teaching storytelling with Jay Bonasinga, who is the New York Times best-selling author of the Walking Dead novels. So he wrote all the novels for the Walking Dead that, you know, a lot of his stuff made it into the TV show, a lot of the characters. And Jay and I are going on the road to teach the power of narrative to executives. So we're teaching storytelling. How to use stories to overcome objections, to build rapport, to build trust, to define a vision, to create, you know, to create opportunities. So we're starting to do that with some big companies in beginning of 2019. So if anybody is interested in that, if you want to bring us in for a half day to teach your executives the power of story, how to be good at telling stories, that's what we did a little bit of that at DePaul University, which is where I actually stumbled upon the great Jess.
How long does it take somebody? I mean, whenever I have new people on the air, and again, you don't, you never really know, but you have to. How long does it take before you, if you feel that you see something that's interesting, be it something that happens in traffic that impacts law enforcement, impacts something that you sense it's out of the ordinary, and how long does it take before you get the confidence to where if you think it's interesting or you think it's funny, other people will too?
For a story?
Or even a news item. You have 10 you could talk about, and there's one that tells more of a tale than the other. I mean, how do you select the news story? There's some kind of a feeling that you...
I think you're right. I think if it gets you excited, guess what? Passion is contagious. So is apathy. So when we were doing the workshop, the storytelling session with Jess and her class at DePaul University, you know, they were coming up with stories. I said, hey, here's the first rule of storytelling. Only tell stories you like telling. Guess what? If you find this story really boring, why are you making us all sit and listen to it? Tell us a story you love.
One of the contributors of his show, he does a lot of he's on his second novel. He wrote a novel about growing up black on the South Side. He teaches creative writing over at Columbia. And he writes short stories, and they go to, like, libraries and so forth. They can't be real long because you're reading
right.
to people. I'm sure you really must feel that way there. If you're actually going to travel over to sit in front of 40 people and read your story, you must figure that it impacts them as well as you. I mean, you have to have that confidence, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you know, the story is, we teach communication is always about the other person, right? So it's always about your audience. What benefit can you provide to them? How can you entertain them? How can you enlighten them? How can they walk away from that experience going, hey, I'm glad I talked to that person. Or, man, that was a great story. So I write for Forbes, and the last article I wrote for Forbes was called The 5 Essential Stories Every Business Leader Should Possess. And it broke down, here are the 5 you have to have in your pocket so when you're out to drinks with a potential client or when you're meeting somebody for the first time, you have these great stories that you can share, because what happens is I share a story with you over drinks because we just met, and now you're going to share a story with me. And now I learned something about you. You let me in. I let you in. And it's building that trust. It's building that relationship. And stories can do that very, very quickly.
I love it. It's dating 101.
I definitely agree with that. I always tell people, my little sister, she always asks me, she's like, how do you make connections with people so well? And I said, honestly, it's just storytelling. And going through that class with Gary at DePaul was just like such a simple yet so smart way to tell stories and connect with people effectively. I was just blown away. I was like, I have to share this with like everyone I know.
Gary,
anybody can be a good storyteller. Anybody can be a good storyteller. There's a secret formula, little map, five or six points on this map, and anybody can learn to tell great stories.
Gary, what do you say we have you back one of these days? This was fun. I have a bunch of questions. Now that I've talked to you, I should have asked and didn't, which is
yes, anytime.
Likewise.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself, right. And we'll tweet out.
Thanks a lot, everyone.
We'll tweet out how to find you. S&P futures still up 12. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Stephanie Koenig. She's Jay-Z on the board. And now she's not just on the board. She's an interviewee. She's everything. By the way, do we really need somebody to give Jay-Z the ability to speak twice as much during a day?
I don't think so. I think, you know, she can just pipe in.
She's good. I don't know if the world's ready for that. S&P futures down 12. Dow futures down 96. Nasdaq futures down 23. Oil down 69 cents. This is spectacular drop and all. It's almost like Amazon, for God's sake. 10-year yield back to 3.12, up 0.03 points. Over in Europe, we've got Texas is now down 17.1%. FTSE up 16.2. CAC around down 7. We've moved up, and those guys have moved sort of the other way. It's a lot. In Asia, we got a mixed bag, but Nikkei bouncing back pretty huge. Up 307, 1.4%. They've been getting basically their butt kicked. Shanghai up 25, that's a whole 1% back over 2,500. 2,562. We've been kind of watching that 2,500 line. They've been back and forth a couple times. Hang Seng, though, down 226. 24,585, and they have not been able to get back to 25,000. As I said before, oil down 69 cents. Brent down a whole $1.16. It's 1.5%. What did Brent get to? That was 91 or something? Everybody was talking.
It was right around there, yeah.
Yeah, were we talking about $100 Brent? Not so fast. Natural gas, 322, back up another 2 cents. That is hung in there, almost near the highs, even though oil has gone from down like 12%. RBOB gas, 181, and we've got gold down $3, silver unchanged. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Chicago is mostly cloudy today, high 65, low 47. Phoenix is going to be mostly sunny with a high of 85, low of 59. In Monday Night Football, the Patriots beat the Bills 25-6. And in basketball, the Warriors beat the Bulls 149-124. There is no traffic to report because there are no accidents. Normal traffic coming into the loop, and that is all I have. Back to you.
Nothing like yesterday where the Ryan was closed the whole morning because they picked up shells for yet another...
That's
expressway.
Always happening on the Ryan.
Yeah, but you'd think there'd be like... John, how are you?
I'm going great. Yourself?
I'm doing fine. Well, you think it would be a bad thing politically for me to say that I would want at all times four or five Jeeps with the 50 calibers on them like in Rat Patrol, and as soon as somebody started shooting out of a car, we just leveled the whole thing and figured out how good everybody was in there afterward? Do you think people would be pissed off at that?
I think at least if you shoot at a couple tires, you may get them going.
But this way, I mean, I question. I don't really want to go down this road, but I'm going to. I question the whole idea of crime and punishment in this country versus other places. And I am absolutely not for cruel and unusual punishment. But I also know that some people that have been contributors to the show who have lived in Singapore say you're actually much freer over there than you are here because nobody does any crime because people are afraid to do it. I mean, I'm not for lobbing people's hands off or whatever else they do over there to people, but the fact is, there's places here where people don't feel free, and the criminal justice system obviously is not doing the job. I mean, anybody over the age of reason, at 18, 19, 20, however the hell old you are, that feels it's okay to shoot out of a moving car anywhere you feel like it, I honestly question whether or not that person is rehabable. I mean, if you haven't figured that out by that age, I mean, what's going on? I mean, I'm not so sure that, you know, I don't know about locked up for like a really long time or what, but I don't know. How do we have people to think that's okay, Steph? I mean, what?
I don't know. I don't even know how we have underage or, you know, people of questionable.
Yeah.
The younger generation, I don't understand how they even think it's okay. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, when I was young, my grandmother used to say at the age of 7, you should know right from wrong.
Yeah.
And at the age of 21... you should be able to be on your own, and there's no excuses. You should know what to do and what not to do. I mean, if you haven't picked it up by age 7, then it's not okay to hit your brother or sister, whatever the hell you happen to have. That you're probably not going to pick it up.
Don't get me wrong.
Well, we just
go ahead.
We just had. I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, they finally arrested this person. But we actually had a serial shooter here. That was just. I mean, they haven't released a motive yet, if they know one, but just appears at random. He'd drive into a neighborhood, he'd see somebody, he'd shoot him.
That was the same as on, the guy in
like,
D.C.
13 or 14 of them.
Yeah, remember the guy in D.C.?
Caught the guy.
Well, how long ago was that, Steph? That was,
that was like 6 years ago, 7 years ago? The guy in D.C.?
Well, you got a lady pumping gas, you got a guy cutting his lawn,
mm-hmm.
and it was like you didn't want to go outside and do anything. The guy just drive by and drill you.
It was actually him right. And his son.
Yeah, it was. Didn't they have a trunk that they had a thing and he put the rifle
through? Yeah, he's looking through the hole in the trunk.
Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
John, speaking of front-running the market, and again, I'm not leading either one of the witnesses here, or Jay-Z, I'll put her in that group, any one of the three witnesses. I don't know if you've been watching this. Here you go. Trump, if you want your stocks to go down, I strongly suggest voting Democrat. What manner of moron? I can't imagine why he thinks that's appropriate, but anyway. General Electric.
Well, it shouldn't surprise you after everything we've seen.
No. But that doesn't make it right.
No, it won't. It's ridiculous. It's unfathomable.
It's like having a kid in the neighborhood put like paint on your car and say, well, that's what Joey does.
Wait a second. Elon Musk got in trouble for, you know, changing. I know Recognize is a little different. It was his own stock. But, you know, you can't go out and just say statements like that. That's ridiculous.
Well, you know, you listen to, I'm going to say, if you listen to conservatives, I mean, again, I'm not, and listen to people on the national TV, if you just were some boob from, you know, the fourth moon of Alpha Centauri or someplace, you would swear that whenever Republicans were in office, the market went up, and whenever Democrats. And yet, if you were to take a total history of the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones, from what is it, 1890-something, right, John? If you were to take a history the entire way, I'm going to say that you would find, up until a few years ago, they were damn near dead even. And
In fact,
I'm going to say that since the market was down so low and Obama took office and came up so much from there, that probably if you use recent stuff, even with Trump's rally when he got elected, actually most of that rally took place when Obama was in office, so depending on where you meant to cut off, I'm going to say that the market is actually slightly, not tradable at all, slightly more positive when the Democrats are in office. And yet everybody talks about how much better the market is when the Republicans are in there, and the fact is it's just not true.
Right, it's one of those misnomers that fairy tales that people take as fact now because they've heard it so often.
Which isn't to say that if this particular time in the world that if the Democrats win both houses, I would probably say that given the fact that there was just some kind of a tax cut that favored business and people would be worried about that being reversed, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the market did go down some. Okay, but that does, but that's not the same as saying, well, Republicans are good for the market and Democrats are good for
the regulation would bring about the same thing and possibly an increase in regulation at that point.
But that's an emotional, like, recourse, right? That's people thinking that, the Democrats are going to make changes that will impact.
Right.
And so, you know, there's no fundamentals based on that until there is actually some policy that does change.
Well, but I'm going to say that if that night, I'll ask you flat out. So that night, if we get the gang, you and your significant other, and we go to Club Lago, and we find out that the Democrats get both the House and the Senate, would you rather be short or long that instant?
Of course, you'd rather be. I mean, the market. You're going to expect the market to decline. So
for a little while.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, you know, that 6 months from now, you're right. Now, back to my, I'm all over the place.
Put it this way, I wouldn't put any sort of long-term trade.
No.
A short-term trade.
Oh, no, if you were short, I'd cover right then.
Yeah, I'd probably be, you know, looking in the next couple of hours to see where I was, and then from there, I'd probably
be
back to about normal.
You'd be on your smartphone buying in your spoos that you just made 400 points at.
Right.
Hey, question, and back to my, I know I'm all over the place, but that's because I know you guys can follow me, and the listeners, GE. Speaking of insider trading, they came out this morning and they say they're slashing their quarterly dividend to a penny a share. Stock is actually up for a while on that. Now, all of a sudden, I don't know when this came out, but they are talking about the Department of Justice jumping in on this SEC investigation into their accounting regarding insurance losses. And I'm going to say one of the things that has got to be one of the most difficult in the world in the accounting area is trying to figure out whether you're making or losing money on insurance. And I think GE has a problem. Matter of fact, they came by our office here, Jan. I don't know if they did out there, because they obviously got PTI's name from somewhere. Some very polished, you know, I'm going to say she was in her 50s, came by and gave a presentation on GE insurance for people that go into nursing homes, essentially end of. But it was kind of interesting insurance because you don't buy, what do you want to call it, long-term care insurance and have it good for long-term. You sort of estimate how long you're going to make it, and that's how much insurance you buy. And they have all these statistics that, you know, you think that, you know, you might go into a nursing home in the last 25 years. Well, most people, what is it, Steph, the last 2.5 years? I mean, it's not very long.
Once you're in a nursing home,
yeah.
It's not very long.
That's very long. And so do you want to buy 3 years' worth for how long do you think you're going to make it? Anyway, but that I think that's the insurance that there's – GE evidently didn't know how to price it or
– It actually says old reinsurance contracts. So
right. You know. But they also had issues with this too. So they've had issues for that whole area. But so now I'm going to say that Department of Justice thing is a market mover. How many people do you think traded on that? Do you think the Department of Justice kept it closed? I mean, I think Washington's becoming the biggest insider trading people that there is. And
but they're legally allowed. Well, congressional people are legally allowed to.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of scary. This GE, talk about going down a rat hole, huh? I mean, Jack Welch made a fortune. We'll tell you he's the most brilliant man that ever walked. Just ask him. And he's had three hot wives, all of them younger than him. So I guess he did it okay, Steph, but didn't leave much for the next guy, did he?
Oh, well, we've watched GE, we've watched Sears, we've watched some of the big old companies, you know. Exxon, a lot of these big old, you know, companies that had their heyday are not doing well, to say the least.
Well, and as far as the brilliance of Jack Welch, I think you just mentioned it, Chief, that, you know, he was part of this, you know, debacle of, you know, this finance portion of GE. So I mean, you got to tag it onto his shoulders, you know, under his tutelage.
You know what the GE for most people that, you know, don't go back all as far, but some people probably do. GE was appliances, correct? Light bulbs,
right.
Duh.
Right.
They were power plant equipment, correct?
Yep.
General Electric made the first. Matter of fact, the coal plant that just closed here in Chicago, General Electric made the first massive flywheel in there for Sam Insull, who was at a Commonwealth Edison, that he was bigger than anybody had ever made before, and he told the people at GE that, I want you to make it. If it doesn't work, I'll still pay for it. And then he helped in the design. The interesting part of it was they didn't know if it could work, gang, because guess what? The thing was so big that the outer edge of the wheel went faster than the speed of sound.
Wow.
And they have a piece of that wheel in GE's headquarters in, where are they, in New York someplace. But GE was exceptionally innovative, and all of a sudden, come the 1970s, interest rates are to the moon, and GE is a AAA-rated company. At the time, they were one of a few. There's always about like five of them, right, Steph, that are AAA-rated, and they pretty much wander around, or they don't stay there.
Yep.
So they were AAA-rated, and short-term rates were, I'm going to say, 14-15%. So all the stuff comes piling into this Resolution Trust, which is one of the biggest cesspool things that ever happened in this country. Not very many people even remember it, where they took an awful lot of other people's wealth and gave it to a few people. Well, GE was the single, probably biggest benefactor of the Resolution Trust. And they just financed stuff long-term. They got these buildings, whatever they were, commercial, residential, you name it, out of the federal government at incredibly pennies on the dollar, where they actually were able to price it at 15%, because the thing was returning like 25 at the price they got it for. So all through the years, they did exactly what they tell everybody else not to do. They finance long-term with short-term money. And
same thing Illinois does.
But timing is everything, Steph. If all of a sudden the short-term money, if you're buying something returning 4% and your short-term goes to 15, it's the timing is like really bad, because you're paying 15% for the stuff you're earning. Now, the other way around, if you can get it the other way, buy stuff to return in 25, and you're paying 15, and all of a sudden every month from like 1981 down, their short-term prices went down, and as they went down, the price of what they bought went up, to the point where the rest of the company became almost laughable. Even though they still were making great engines and all this other kind of stuff, the people who made all the money at GE, the real best and brightest, were not now engineers putting aircraft engines together. They were a bunch of guys who rigged the system, or put it this way, benefited from a rigged system and bought essentially half the country for 20 cents on the buck, and now they're down to 3% money. And the building they bought for $50,000 is now worth a half a mil. It was by far the biggest grab around. And all of a sudden, that game starts to end, because now interest rates are low and they started selling some of it off. But for a long period of time, GE Capital was bigger than the rest of GE, right, Steph?
Oh, for sure. It was, I believe it probably comprised, well, I know it comprised a major part of their overall
profits.
Profits, yes.
Well, then they started getting in the insurance, and they started to think they were geniuses in everything. No, they were geniuses in property only because the government let them buy it so cheap, and they were able to finance short-term money. And they never got their credit ratings changed, which is even more interesting.
And they had a lot of capital.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these contracts for these large industrial projects, they were lending to the people that were actually purchasing their stuff, so, you know, with relatively safe returns. So, I mean, they had a lot of capital to work with.
And at the end of the day, you say, well, gee, what happened to their manufacturing base? Those guys didn't want to manufacture. I mean, John, look, put it this way. We both know a bunch of people. I mean, you and I are from the same cloth. If you say to some people, hey, look, if I got a, well, go back to my Pullman days, if you give me a rail car contract and I actually can produce 150 rail cars and watch a bunch of steel walk in the door, and a year later some gorgeous railroad car goes out of there that people worked on and actually say I was part of that car, that to me, that's heaven, okay?
Right.
Somebody else will say, hey, you two chumps worked for 4 years and all you did was make $3 million. Guess what? I just sold a company and I just made six in a day. You guys are idiots. Right? So, I mean, that essentially was the competition of the two sides in GE. Can you imagine those guys at the same party?
Did they have the same parties?
Well, even when Jack Welch had a meeting, the head of aircraft engines, the guy who was sitting there going, you schlumps just made 90 bazillion aircraft engines and you worked 24 hours a day and you made 20 million last year. Guess what? I bought and sold two resorts and I made 30. Screw you guys. Can you imagine that meeting?
Yeah, but that's part of the problem with people who only, you know, buy and sell things, don't actually produce things, because, you know, their sense of value and their sense of contribution. I mean, there aren't workers that are working when you buy one company and sell it again. I mean, there are still workers that work at those companies, but you're not increasing the working pool or producing anything that's tangible.
All right, when that guy drives up in the Ferrari and you're sitting there in your Ford Focus, tell me how bad he feels, what you just said.
I didn't say he felt bad. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. But
they essentially became a hedge fund, you know.
Yeah, well, they did. So. And they got involved in all this stuff, and they got into the low interest lending, and I got to believe they were all over the mortgage stuff.
Leasing, that was the other thing. Yeah. They were sucking up all the leasing, you know, contract.
Well, let me get this straight. I get to put my engine on your plane, and I'll lease you to pay plane too.
Right.
How many years did virtually every airline, every plane they bought was GE leasing?
Well, my lease at the office now is long gone, but back in the days when you actually leased copiers, now they're just, so this is some time ago, but it was bought by GE. I forget who I bought it through, but eventually it was GE Capital.
Yeah.
You know, they held the lease.
But once you get into that business, it's so easy, it's so clean, you don't get your hands dirty, you don't have to wear a hard hat. I mean, let's sell this light business. Who gives a bleep about light bulbs? You know, who gives a bleep about this? I mean,
how about the appliances? Let it sell the appliances, eh?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, now they're struggling, and it'd be interesting to see if they even survive. Like, I got to believe that the aircraft. But why wouldn't somebody just buy the aircraft engine piece out? I mean,
well, the medical equipment's the other big one.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. They do huge MRIs too. They're a big MRI producer.
Oh, it's not like there's no company. But now, how do you walk out to the guys that are basically working their fanny off? And making money and the aircraft engines or the MRIs and say, by the way, we just pissed away $6.2 billion in insurance. And you say, how do you lose money with insurance, though? For God's sake. I mean,
you know, even reinsurance, because reinsurance is, you know, used kind of even, well, cashed in on usually less.
Well, I mean, you could, when you say reinsurance, when you go to State Farm, and you get insurance on your house. Say you're in Florida. Probably they're going to take some piece of it. And if they have too much of a concentration in an area, they're going to go to General Re or does Lloyd's. Lloyd's still around? They probably do some of it. G does some of it. Warren Buffett's firm. Is he General Re?
I don't know what he is, but he definitely
he does some
insurance.
Of it. So that you spread around the stuff.
You diversify
geographically wide.
Yeah.
To where you don't want. Well, AIG, of all places, they do it.
Yep.
You know, at one point, they were 40% of all the mortgage insurance in the state of California. Now, how in the hell can somebody sit there and say, wait a minute, we'll take 40% of a state? How can anybody be that ignorant?
Especially a state that may fall off.
Yeah, it could have a problem. either floods or drought. Well, I guess drought. You can't really screw a house up by a drought, but you're going to have floods, you're going to have fires.
Yep.
I mean, you're not going to have that. As much in Illinois. I mean, you could have tornadoes, but I'm saying how could these guys screw up this bad? And all the while, can you imagine the bonuses and stuff those guys are paid through the years?
It blows my mind.
Yeah, and even the shareholders of it. But the stock has gone from I remember it was between 30 and 35 forever, right, Jan? And then
it was in the 30s forever, yeah.
And then it dropped down in 2007, 2008, and I've had multiple clients. Say, well, gee, G's under 15, should I buy it? Or G's under 20, should I buy it? And the answer always was yes. And then all of a sudden I'm going, I don't know, this thing never seems to have a good day. And so we bought the whole bunch of the 11 put spread, full disclosure, yesterday, Jan, and it was up this morning, and I'm going, we got it real cheap. We got the two-weeker out, but now it's 10.81, and I'm sitting there thinking, should I have done the 10.5 or the 10? This, you know, an hour ago, we were the wrong way, and now we're the other way. I mean, we only paid 3 cents for it, but still, I mean, am I too high with that one? Is the thing going to be 9 in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, who knows with this thing? I mean, it's just, you know, one thing after another with, at one time, one of the bellwethers of our economy. I mean, it's really sad, to be honest with you.
Well, then the SEC, now the Department of Justice this morning, it's what caused the thing to come down, are talking about investigating. How do you just lob a $6.2 billion loss at people? Like this week, you didn't know about it a month ago, or 2 months ago.
Well, that's, a,
Right, exactly.
Well, they did just put a new CEO in there, so the question is were things being hidden before, and he's exposing it, or is this just, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the outcome of this is.
Well, you know the drill when you become a CEO. You throw all this stuff out there.
Of course
you do. And you make the place look like zero, then all of a sudden a year from now it's trading 15 and you're the hero.
Of course. Well, you know, you got to make sure that everyone else is, all the dirty laundry that was out there before, or skeletons in the closet, are exposed when you start. Otherwise, they're your skeletons, right?
So. Well, that's right. Anyway, Jan, what do you think for the rest of, after yesterday's bizarre day? What do you think today? We're fading already. The future's only up 5.
Flip a coin, and that's the way it'll end.
I'm assuming that you sold on the open. And then bought it 2:45 yesterday and made a fortune. I'm just assuming that.
Just like you. I knew exactly that was going to happen.
Well, I've got the NASDAQ down now at $7. I got the S&P's only up 5. Dow Jones up 32, and they were up 140 a little bit ago. So we're already starting our sell-off here. Just like yesterday. But starting earlier. Jan, I'll talk to you again on Friday, right, bud?
You got it.
Jay-Z, great job. Nice guest. You're all of a sudden now you feel like you're promoted over there, for God's sake. Steph, as usual, good job. Talk to everybody tomorrow.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.